This is Press Play on KCRW. I'm Madeline Bram, and this is the third annual Press Play Summer Mixtape, a week of artist interviews and custom sets from KCRW DJs. Today, a conversation with country rock legend Lucinda Williams. That's her song, Change the Locks, which put her on the map more than 30 years ago. At the time, she was shopping around her self-titled album. Major labels back then said she sounded either too rock for country music or too country for rock. But the punk label Rough Trade Records believed in her music and released her album to critical acclaim. And a decade later, she found mainstream success with her hit album, Car Wheels on a Gravel Road.
He won't take me back when I come around. Sorry, then he puts me out. I got a big chain around my neck, and I'm broken down like a train wreck. Well, it's over. I know it, but I can't let go.
It's her song, Can't Let Go. Lucinda Williams has spent her life on the road with her music, which she details in her new memoir. It's called Don't Tell Anybody the Secrets I Told You. And it comes after she suffered a stroke 3 years ago. The left side of her body was impaired, and she was forced to stop playing the guitar and had to relearn how to walk. But that has not held her back. Lucinda Williams is now 70 years old with a new album called Stories from a Rock and Roll Heart.
We hung together as long as we could.
That's her new song, Let's Get the Band Back Together, and Lucinda Williams joins me now. Welcome to Press Play.
Thank you.
So I guess you did get the band back together. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you.
Well, talk about that. Talk about getting the band back together, creating the album, and going on tour.
Well, you know, I just didn't want to slow down and stop because, you know, the thought of being impaired and, you know, not ever being able to do stuff again just terrified me. So, you know, the shows kept getting booked. The tour bus was waiting. The band was ready. And I said, okay, let's go. You know, I think I needed it for my soul. You know, I needed it. I needed it for my spirit, my soul. You know, it's just the music is so much a part of me. Even though I couldn't play guitar, and that did hold me back to some extent, but because I have a great band and I've got a couple of great guitar players, and I showed up and walked on stage, they backed me up and I sang. You know, we made it work.
Yeah. Sounds wonderful. How does it work with the songwriting? Because I know that you write as you play, or you use your guitar to help you come up with songs. So how are you able to write the songs on this latest album?
Well, the biggest thing was that it opened me up to collaborating with other people on songs, which I had tried to do before, but never really been that successful at. A lot of people had wanted to try to write with me and everything. Especially, you know, when I moved to Nashville, because that's what everybody does here all the time, is co-write. And I tried with a few different people, one of whom was the legendary, iconic John Prine. And I thought it would be easier to bring something in that I'd already started on rather than, you know, try to sit down and create a song from scratch. So I brought that song in to John.
Which song was that?
The song that I took to John to help me with was Drunken Angel. Because I'd been working on it for a long time and couldn't quite get it finished. And, you know, people would think, well, John's a great writer and Lucinda's a good writer too. So let's get the two of them together, you know, to make magic. And it doesn't always work that way though, because, you know, we each are good at writing songs, but you know, he came up with some great lines for John Prine's song, But, you know, I didn't think they really worked and for me. But regardless of that, we had a wonderful evening, you know, talking and laughing and drinking wine. And, you know, he's just such a great person to hang out with and talk with.
So no hard feelings that you couldn't write a song together?
No, not at all. Because I ended up with feeling closer to John Prine than I had before, getting to know him a little bit better. And that was worth everything. You know, the friendship, the value of the friendship with him.
Yeah, he died of COVID early on in the pandemic.
Yes. Horrible.
Very sad.
Such a loss.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, so for this album, you collaborated successfully with several artists, and I just want to play one of the new songs, a collaboration. This one, you're collaborating with the country artist Margot Price, and it's called This Is Not My Town.
Now I don't even know this place.
Not My Town by my guest Lucinda Williams, featuring country artist Margot Price. Tell me what you are singing there and why you wanted to collaborate with Margot Price on that song.
Well, you know, we've formed a friendship. She lives here in Nashville also, and she's just got a great spirit. I just love her. And she came into the studio and contributed vocals to the song. You know, we had a few different people come in because I love to be in the studio and invite different artists in to add their energy to things. You know, it's I've always loved doing that. So Margot was around and available and she loved the idea of doing it. And another one was the artist Angel Olsen.
Oh, yeah.
And she came in and put this really small part, but important vocal part on the end of Jukebox, which I think just makes the whole song.
And then I won't be so lonely anymore.
The subject of the song, what town are you talking about?
Well, that's just it. I always preface the song by telling people that, you know, it's not necessarily about that town that they're in. It's just more about feeling isolated. It's kind of, dare I say it, somewhat political song. Just about feeling isolated, like we all felt, I think, a lot of us did anyway, you know, during the Trump administration. And, you know, just feeling like you can't connect with people and trying to get people to wake up, in a sense.
Is that difficult in the country world in Nashville?
I would say it's definitely different.
Uh-huh.
Not necessarily the country world, but not among the artists so much as the country music industry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they tend to be more conservative than the rock and roll music industry.
Right.
Yeah.
And so have they said anything to you about being political? Because I know your last album, your previous one to this, was pretty anti-Trump.
Right. They haven't said anything. I think at this point, people just pretty much know where I stand, you know.
Yeah.
I think they see me as a rebel.
Uh-huh.
After a while, they figure out what you're about, and they kind of step back and go, okay. You know, I think they have to just kind of know what it is, you know, and figure it out like that.
And what about on the other side, though? Because like I said in the intro, initially when you were starting out, music executives, A&R people, they didn't know what to do with you.
Yeah.
On the rock and roll side, too. And maybe they had some misconceptions about what country music is about.
Right. Well, yeah, that was when I was in Los Angeles and I'd done a demo tape that got passed around and ended up in the offices of several different record labels. And, you know, they said, it was for, I'd made a demo tape for Sony Records in LA. And they said they thought it was too country for rock. So they sent it to the Sony offices in Nashville, who said it was too rock for country. You know, I know. Well, you know, I remind people that it's called the music business.
Uh-huh.
And in every business, there has to be marketing aspect, you know, or so they think. So, you know, they have to figure out how to market the product.
Yeah.
Which includes, you know, what bin is it going to go in the record store? Could be anything from that to what category is it in? It has to be, they have to know that before they can try to sell the product, I guess.
So let me play your breakout hit then from 1998. And this is a little bit of it called Car Wheels on a Gravel Road.
Sitting in the kitchen, a house of Macon, Loretta singing on the radio. Smell of coffee, eggs and bacon, car wheels on a gravel road. Somebody somewhere don't know. Come on now, child, we're gonna go for a ride. Car wheels on a gravel road.
Car Wheels on a Gravel Road from 1998. Now, this is about your childhood. You had a quite itinerant childhood, right? You moved around a lot.
Yeah.
And so was that a happy experience, moving around a lot or not?
I think it was. I remember it being kind of fun and exciting, you know, a different house, different people, a different town. I think I really took to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this is because your dad was a literature professor and he was moving around a lot for different jobs,
yeah,
teaching jobs.
From college to college. So they were all college towns that we lived in.
And what was one of your favorite places?
I really liked the time when we were living in Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
He was teaching at LSU. And some of my other relatives lived there at the same time. You know, that was where I was living when I started playing guitar, when I started taking guitar lessons in 1965. And that was also the year I discovered Bob Dylan's album, Highway 61 Revisited,
mm-hmm,
which just blew me away, even though it's only 12 years old.
Hmm.
But something about it drew me in.
And was that when you thought, okay, this is what I want to do? I want to be?
Yeah.
A musician?
It pretty much was, yeah.
When you were 12?
Yeah, when I was 12. I think I wanted to be partly like Bob Dylan and partly like Joan Baez.
Huh.
You know, I loved that iconic look that she had, you know.
Right. The long hair, the
yeah,
sort of the hippie look.
Right, yeah.
Strumming a guitar.
That was just a really iconic time.
Yeah.
To be listening to music and being, you know, so much great stuff to be exposed to then.
Yeah, including in your own home, your dad, he, just for people who don't know, Miller Williams was the poet at President Bill Clinton's second inaugural, and he was friends with really seminal writers like Charles Bukowski and Flannery O'Connor. Mm-hmm. And what was that like, having these people in your life, and did they influence your writing?
Well, I probably didn't realize the intenseness of it till later when I looked back on it. You know, when I was writing my book,
mm-hmm.
that was the one thing about, you know, writing a book, was it really takes you back there and made me appreciate what I had even more. You know, I got to see them as just regular people, you know, friends of my dad's who would come over to the house, or we would go to their house and visit. And my dad would ask me to go get my guitar and come play a couple of songs. And I'd go get my guitar and go in the living room and maybe play them a couple of songs. So some of those people were my first audience, you know, these great minds.
Wow. What was Flannery O'Connor like? She, her writing is so gothic and
I know
can be so brutal, but in terms of her view of human nature, but what was she like as a person? Do you remember?
I remember her being, you know, very good natured. You know, there was a sweetness about her. She was really my father. He described her as his greatest teacher.
Huh.
You know, they became really good friends, and she helped him. Apparently, she directed him quite a bit with his writing and everything. And he was going to meet with her at her farm in Milledgeville, Georgia, which was not too far from Macon, where we were living at the time. And he grabbed me and said, "You want to go with me?" And I went along, and she was raising peacocks. That was her hobby at the time.
Wow.
And my father said that I was, you know, he went inside to visit with her. And I ran around chasing her peacocks, apparently, out in the yard. Yeah.
Wow. That's quite an image.
Yes.
And so she was your dad's greatest teacher. Who was your greatest teacher?
I think my dad was,
mm-hmm.
you know, I mean, he would literally sit with me and, you know, we would look at lyrics. When I finally started writing songs, I would get his advice. I would show him the lyrics and want to know what he thought, because I looked up to him, not just as my father, but as a writer. And I learned a lot that way, almost kind of by osmosis. In a sense, it was like an apprenticeship. The last thing I sent him, I remember him saying, I think it was the songs for the Essence album. And he got back to me and he said, "Honey," we were on the phone, and he said, "I think this is as close to poetry as you've ever been."
Mm, wow.
And yeah, and I was just, needless to say, I was just pleased as punch, you know. And I said, "Really? Does that mean I've graduated?" And he said, "Yes, you've graduated." So that meant everything to me.
Well, speaking of Essence, let's hear the title track from that 2001 album.
Bring me your gift.
literally have the chills listening to that.
I know, right? I was listening to it. I was thinking, wow, this sounds really good.
It's really good. It's so sultry, and just the to talk about a guy as a drug that way.
Right. Whew. See, that's why I think that's why Nashville said I was too rock for country. I think it was because of the lyrics. You know, I mean, I'm not really sure why, but that's kind of my guess.
Who are you talking about?
Oh God, I can't say. I might have said it might be in the book. It probably is. Now you'll have to go. You're like,
have to go find that passage.
Nice sales pitch, right?
Would it be someone we know?
Yes. If you read the book, you'll see it all explains everything. I'm very nice about it. I didn't want to be mean. I didn't want anybody to feel bad or get their feelings hurt, you know. Mm-hmm. So I tried to handle it as delicately as possible. But yes, I was drawn to the bad boys. I'm sure there are other women like me.
So there are a lot of songs on the album or a few songs on the album that talk about people that you admired, worked with, loved, not necessarily romantically, but who have passed, like Tom Petty.
Yeah.
Yeah. So is there a part of this album that's like a memorial in a sense?
I guess, I might not have recognized that on a conscious level at the time, but there was certainly I'm sure it informed some of the songs and maybe the mood of the album because you have to remember there was COVID, you know, then a hurricane blew through Nashville and knocked off part of our house.
Wow.
And then I had my stroke. And then, during this time we lost people.
Yeah.
We lost important, wonderful people. It just seemed like every other day we were losing someone. And, you know, the tornado and my stroke, it was almost a biblical thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So obviously it was on your mind.
Yes. Not to mention the politics that were all around us in your face constantly every day on the news every day. It was relentless. If you remember, you know, there was this Trump this, Trump that, Trump this, Trump. And it was just like, enough already, you know?
Well, strap in because it's coming right? back.
I know. And I'm ready. So people get ready. There's a train a-coming. You know, you don't need a ticket. You just get on board. You know, well, people need to wake up.
Yeah.
It's a thing. I mean,
how are you doing physically? Are you recovered largely? Recovering? How are you doing?
I'm still recovering.
Uh-huh.
It's a long, difficult process.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, I couldn't walk across the room at first without falling down. So I got past that. It's just amazing what happens when your brain kind of short circuits, which is basically what a stroke is, you know, and then, you know, nothing else works after that because it tells your brain tells your body what to do. And so you kind of have to like redo all these exercises to almost kind of trick your brain back into the way it was before, you know, like your brain is trying to figure out, oh yeah, I have to send a little signal that says, put your leg, this leg in front of the other one. And like all those signals short circuit and your body kind of just goes, I don't know what to do anymore because the brain's not telling me what to do. So yeah, it's a long process. And then I wasn't able to play guitar. So I had to start trying to hope and pray that I could get that back. But
do you think you will?
I think I will because I got the other stuff back.
Good.
You know, part of it's the pain in I've got some arthritis too on top of everything else. Thank you, God. Okay. I know you're testing me. I know what's going on here. So, you know,
So let's go out on an up note. On that note,
yeah.
Thinking about your recovery, and this one is called New York Comeback. So I think that's appropriate. And
yes, okay.
This one, you have Bruce Springsteen doing backup vocals, which is great. Mm-hmm. I love that.
Yeah,
that he's doing backup vocals on it, and also his wife Patti Scalfa.
Yeah.
So, you want to set this up for us? This song, we'll go out on it.
Okay. This was brought to the table, I think, mainly by, I think maybe Tom Overby, who's my husband and manager. He was involved in several of the songs, as well as Jesse Mallon. You know, Jesse being from New York, of course, helped. He contributed to the spirit of the song.
Mm-hmm.
He was really good at bringing a rock and roll element to a lot of the songs. So Tom came up with the initial idea, you know, sort of playing off the idea of a, you know, sports team. And, you know, it just becomes kind of an organic flow where, mm-hmm. you know, everybody's kind of throwing this in and throwing that in. And I think probably with Jesse, I think we came up with the melody together. I think it's really cool. I like it, you know.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And congratulations on the new album and the memoir.
Thank you.
And you're going on tour. It's all incredible.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's all looking up for you. So congratulations.
Thank you. And I love Casey or Debbie. I've always been a fan.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah.
That's Lucinda Williams. Her new album is called Stories from a Rock and Roll Heart. Her memoir is called Don't Tell Anybody the Secrets I Told You. And as promised, here is New York Comeback.
Before you walk into the night, before you get out the last call, for that last stiff highball,
you're listening to Press Play's third annual summer mixtape. Coming up, KCRW DJ Ann Litt joins in on the fun with a custom set inspired by Lucinda Williams and our interview. Ann Litt is here next on Press Play.